not. We might as well have a plan.
Willis spoke up.
We should all go to bed early, right at 8, as the park closes. Agreed?
Maybeck snorted.
You guys are crazy. You know that?
Finn said.
We need all of us, Maybeck.
He felt a wash with a sudden wave of cold again. Not as strong as at the teepee, but not normal. He lowered his voice.
I think we're done here.
The others suddenly felt the cold as well. Maybeck's smugness fell from his face. He said,
Okay, we'll be there.
But what about the green thing person woman? Charlene asked.
Maybeck answered. He'd lost his sarcasm.
Listen, we better stay alert. Not only when we're in the park.
He added cautiously in a whisper.
Are we so sure this crossing over thing is a one-way street? If we can cross over to there, who says they can't cross over to here?
15.
Finn, are you sure you feel all right?
His mother said, looking up from the kitchen sink where she was doing dishes. His father hummed as he wiped down the kitchen table.
I'm fine. I just want to go to bed early, that's all.
For the third or fourth night in a row?
His mother said. His father barely looked up.
Try to sneak out again, you're grounded for the rest of your life.
Finn and his mother exchanged a look. She'd told his dad, after saying she wouldn't.
I'm not going to sneak out,
Finn promised.
I'll take away your computer. No more email, no more gaming.
This was the worst threat he could make. His father looked up.
There was a break-in at the welding shop the other night. A bunch of gear was stolen. Same night the police, reported a bunch of handcuffs missing from a storage room. This was all over the news. You and your friends go sneaking around at night, you'll be blamed for things like that. You understand? Whether you had anything to do with them or not, you'll end up at the wrong place at the wrong time and it's gonna look bad. Very bad. For you.
Wouldn't the police have security cameras, Dad?
Finn didn't really want the answer to this, but he had to know. Wayne had mentioned the break-in.
I don't have any idea. I'm just worried about you, Finn, not whatever was stolen. Are you listening to anything I'm saying?
Is your homework done?
His mother inquired, changing the subject. She knew when to rescue him.
All done. Seriously, I'm just tired.
It's because you sleep too much, his father said. More yard work would be good for you. Why, when I was your age...
Dad,
Finn complained.
Can we maybe talk about this in the morning?
The digital clock that was part of the stove read 7:45. Finn needed to be in bed and asleep by 8 if he was to meet the others. Finn dressed warmly and climbed into bed, boots and all. He pulled the sheet and blanket up high in case his mother looked in on him. She might wake him if she saw him wearing street clothes. He had no idea what might happen to his DHI if he were rudely awakened from sleep, but he didn't want to find out. He lay there in bed, 7:55. He didn't feel particularly sleepy. If he didn't cross over, then someone else would have to leave the group. This thought made him more anxious and less sleepy. 8:04. He felt his chances slipping away. How would he find them if he arrived late? The Magic Kingdom was huge. This led him to wonder how it was that they all arrived in the same general area. Wayne hadn't explained nearly enough of this. The front door chime sounded. It was an odd time of night for visitors. Their next-door neighbors always used the back door.
Finn!
His mother called upstairs. Both annoyed and curious, Finn dragged himself out of bed. He headed to the door and then caught a look at himself in the mirror. He was fully dressed, head to toe, in day clothes that he hadn't been wearing earlier. What would his mother think of that? He removed his boots and socks and rolled up the legs of his jeans. If he threw a bathrobe over his clothes, he looked ready for bed. A glance into the mirror told him that he had to lose the jacket or look like the Incredible Hulk. Checking himself one last time, he headed out into the hall. Jez stood inside the front door talking to his mother. Finn felt stupid wearing a bathrobe. Too late. She'd glanced up and seen him. He summoned his courage and descended, as if it were perfectly normal to be ready for bed at 8 o'clock. He felt warm under the robe and layers of clothes.
Hey, Jez!
A million thoughts ran around in his busy brain. How did she know where he lived? What was she doing here? He glanced at the grandfather clock. 8:10. This was a serious problem. His mother couldn't shut up, of course. She rambled on about how refreshing it was to meet one of Finn's friends and such a cute girl at that. Finn shot her a private look. His mom excused herself to the kitchen. Jez said,
I came by to congratulate you.
Finn felt confused.
Soccer, Jez said. You guys took third.
The clock read 8:12.
Well, Finn said, moving to open the door. Thanks a lot. That was really nice of you.
Nice bathrobe,
Jez said, stifling a grin.
You feel okay?
Truth was, Finn was overheating in all the layers. Sweat trickled off his forehead. He mopped it up with his sleeve.
Just a little tired. Probably just the game.
She nodded, but studied him oddly. He felt one of his pant legs slip down. He bent over and stuffed it back up, without offering an explanation. The doorbell rang. Mrs. Whitman charged out of the kitchen. Finn tried to stop her with a glance, but it was no good. Finn stepped up and opened the door. Amanda. His mother lost the battle to keep a smile off her face. Heading back into the kitchen, she called out,
I'll get cookies!
Hey, Finn,
Amanda said, stepping inside.
I'm Amanda,
she introduced herself to Jez.
Jez!
Yeah, I know.
Amanda gave Jez that same penetrating look she'd given her earlier at the sports complex. Jez just looked back at her and smiled.
What kind do you like?
Finn's mother asked from the kitchen doorway. The two girls followed Mrs. Whitman.
What kind do you have?
Jez asked. Finn felt outnumbered. He was boiling hot and boiling mad for having his plans interrupted. By the time he reached the kitchen, all three of them were jabbering away about how quickly cookies went stale in the Florida weather. Something about Girl Scouts. Jez mentioned the car wash. The clock read 8:15.
I'm beat,
Finn announced from the hall. The two girls glanced over, the conversation interrupted. His mother gave him an, oh no you don't face. He said,
I mean, I don't feel so hot. Actually, I do feel hot, like a fever or something.
But you just said you felt fine,
Jez corrected him. He swiped his damp forehead with the sleeve of the bathrobe.
Hot,
he repeated.
Did you need something, Amanda?
He asked.
No, I was just in the neighborhood. Thought I'd stop by.
In the neighborhood? Finn didn't think so. She lived several blocks away. Jez asked.
Will I see you at the car wash?
Amanda said earnestly.
Absolutely.
As if Jez had intended this for her.
Night then,
Finn said softly, backing up the stairs.
See you both tomorrow, I guess.
Amanda scrunched her face and snarled secretly at him. She did not want to be abandoned. His mother said,
Finn, we're going to have some cookies.
Amanda saw his panicked expression, and she looked at the clock. She understood.
It's okay. We can do it another time,
she said. She pulled Jez toward the hallway. The girls said goodbye. Finn tried to thank Amanda with his eyes. After the door shut, his mother asked,
Is it true you're not feeling well?
Must be why I'm so tired,
Finn said.
Well, get to bed and we'll see how you feel in the morning.
Music to his ears. 16. The Cinderella castle shone in the night sky. For all the make-believe in this place, everything seemed so real that Finn briefly understood how the lines had blurred. Even at this hour, music floated on the air, coming from Frontierland. Must be a private party, Finn thought. Hadn't Wayne said that private parties had been canceled because of the problems the park had been having? Had Finn imagined that? A damp evening chill stung the air. It felt like rain was coming. Finn didn't know how his DHI would react to rain. He didn't know a lot of things, like where to find the others. They had crossed over ahead of him, no doubt, but were now nowhere to be seen. He considered checking the apartment first, followed by the teepee, but then remembered that Philby had mentioned It's a Small World when they had all met at the sports park. They were looking for attractions that corresponded to the sun clue in the stonecutter's quill, and though the Sunshine Tree Terrace, the Swiss Family Treehouse, and the Carpets of Aladdin were all plausible candidates, Philby and Willa had picked It's a Small World. The ride had two references to the sun, one in its theme song. There is just one moon, and one golden sun. 2. The ride's Central American section included a blazing Mayan sun, the biggest sun in the Magic Kingdom. So Finn headed to It's a Small World first, knowing he would have led the others there had Philby or Maybeck not arrived on time. He found the four waiting outside the attraction. Philby anxiously looking at his wristwatch. Willow waved excitedly as she saw Finn approaching. He heard her say,
I told you he'd make it.
Sorry I'm late. Trouble at home, Finn said.
As they stepped inside, the ride seemed to wake up. The familiar song started playing, a tune that they all knew by heart.
It's after closing. So why did the music suddenly start?
He asked. Philby answered,
Don't worry about it.
Maybeck warned the others that it could be a trap.
Stuff like this doesn't just happen.
Finn told them about the music he'd heard coming from Frontierland.
Maybe there's a party over there.
Charlene said,
Wayne told me the rides and attractions are left on at night. Let's just get it over with.
But the lights are off, Finn said.
Indeed. The farther they moved down the ramp, the darker it grew. Only some emergency floodlights and exit signs were glowing. They provided enough light to see by, but just barely. They all climbed into a boat, Finn sitting with Philby, Maybeck between Charlene and Willa on the bench behind.
That song drives me nuts, Charlene said. The way it gets stuck in my head.
That song is why we're here,
Philby reminded her.
It repeats the word sun over and over, and this is one of the original rides.
The boat started moving. As it rounded a bend into the first scene, the music grew louder. Finn and his friends faced hundreds of dolls, all representing the different countries and continents of the world. They were audio animatronics, so their limbs and mouths moved as they sang. The low light cast eerie shadows. An open arch up ahead led into the next scene.
Do we even know what we're looking for? Charlene whined.
A fast pass back to our normal lives,
Maybeck snorted. Charlene said,
It's creepy in here. Real creepy.
Willa pointed.
Hey, did that doll move?
She asked.
Maybeck said, They're all moving, girl. They're singing.
No, I mean moving, as in walking.
Maybeck laughed. The others followed, even Willa, who was glad for the chance to release the tension they were all feeling. Their boat passed under the arch into the next scene. Behind them, when the DHIs were no longer looking, one of the British dolls leaned forward and snapped its glued feet off the deck of the display. It took a long stride forward. Four others did the same, two from France, two from Switzerland, their mouths moving along with the song lyrics as their feet broke free. Looking for clues, Will and Philby called out the various European countries represented by the dolls.
It's cold tonight,
Charlene complained. She crossed her arms. Finn felt the unusual chill as well. He'd come to recognize that chill. He looked around for any sign of Maleficent. Philby said,
Think in terms of the fable. It's originally an ancient Chinese story, so we should focus on Asia, the rod's next scene. There,
Willa said, pointing.
I just saw a German move.
Now Finn looked back as well.
Philby?
He said. The others turned to look. The boat rocked as they moved. Charlene screamed. Maybeck said a word he wasn't supposed to say. Philby plunged his hand into the dark water and shouted,
Paddle!
Behind them, several dozen dolls had broken loose from the scene and were marching toward the water, toward the boat. The kids paddled, but the boat didn't move any faster. It was locked onto a track and moved mechanically. Behind them, the loose dolls banged into each other and tumbled over, but then stood up again. More and more of them leaned and wiggled and stretched and broke free from the various platforms. They marched down through the panoramas, throwing their legs forward like little soldiers, and fell over face first into the water like lemmings. The boat dragged slowly forward. The kids could not steer it right or left, nor move it any faster. More wide-eyed dolls fell off the platforms and plunged into the shining water. Miraculously, their arms began to stroke freestyle, and their feet, the flutter kick. They were swimming.
They're coming right at us!
Willa shouted. Finn heard little thuds as the first dolls arrived and banged into the hull of the boat.
This isn't happening, Maybeck said, trying to sound calm.
Shut up, said Charlene. Do something!
There were more of the dolls now, maybe 50 or more, all swimming toward the boat, their national costumes reduced to wet rags. They converged on the boat, stacking one atop the next, higher and higher in a floating pile. One doll flopped over the rail and into the boat, then another, and another. The boat passed into the Asia scene. None of the kids was looking for clues now. The dolls' little singing mouths opened and shut, snapping viciously. A few more tumbled over and into the boat. They were climbing. As they landed, they rolled, crawled, and then pulled themselves up to standing. One bit down into Finn's arm, locking its jaw. It drew blood. Finn knocked it off and back into the water. Two other dolls attacked Philby. Maybeck pushed them off as if they were live lobsters, then picked one up and threw it. It struck the wall and smashed into pieces. The other kids cheered. Charlene and Willa knocked the dolls off the edge of the boat before they could climb in. Finn tore a biting doll off Philby's leg. Maybe 100 dolls were now swimming toward them. They were definitely losing the battle. Finn glanced ahead through the next arch to the Americas scene. There he saw dozens of dolls, lined up and waiting for the boat. Maybeck shouted,
"We're losing the war, in case anyone's keeping track."
His leg was bleeding from a bite. Willa smacked the doll back into the water. It rose to the surface, turned, and swam again for the boat. Legions of dolls closed in from all sides. That chorus of singing screamed in Finn's ears.
"It's a small world after all. It's a small world after all."
Finn felt like he was being driven half crazy by the sound.
"There's a way out of this. We're missing something," he cried. "Think! Everyone think!"
"An automatic weapon?"
Maybeck suggested.
"A baseball bat?"
Willa said, grabbing several more dolls and tossing them over the side.
"Form a circle,"
Finn ordered.
"Back to back."
Without arguments, the kids turned back to back, like the 5 points of a star.
"We must have whatever it is we need to beat them,"
Finn said.
"Why?"
asked a cynical Maybeck.
"Because good conquers evil,"
Charlene announced.
"This is the Magic Kingdom. Finn's right."
"We're missing something," Finn said.
"An outboard motor?"
Maybeck quipped.
"A stick of dynamite?"
Finn looked up. They were into the Americas scene now, and there on the wall was the huge Mayan sun. Finn caught himself humming along with the theme song. Willa heard Finn humming. She joined in with the lyrics. The dolls kept advancing. Every kid bore a bruise or an open wound. They swept the dolls off the edge of the boat, but it was clearly a losing battle. Dolls jumped for the boat and held on to its sides. Maybeck banged their little hands with his fists. Charlene joined in singing.
"There is just one moon and one golden sun."
Sun, Finn thought. What were they missing?
"And a smile means friendship to everyone."
Smile. The sun had brought them here. The sun is often shown with a smile on its face. Friendship, Finn thought. "It's all about friendship," Finn declared. "The lyrics! Our ability to spread friendship like the rays of the sun!"
"You're out of your mind,"
Maybeck roared, smashing an encroaching doll.
"A smile means friendship to everyone,"
Willa cried. She considered this a moment while still battling the dolls.
"We have to smile at them,"
Finn hollered.
"Try it,"
Maybeck complained.
"You've got to be kidding."
"Smile,"
Willa and Finn hollered simultaneously. And with that, all but Maybeck broke into massive fake smiles. They looked like jack-o'-lanterns. Finn watched as the effect of those smiles registered in the frozen glass eyes of the dolls. The expressions on the small faces changed from bloodlust to surprise, then curiosity, and then outright affection. The effect quickly spread through the faces of other dolls. Some stopped swimming. Others turned around.
"Keep smiling,"
Finn said through clenched teeth, his fake smile never faltering. As the swimming dolls encountered the smiles, they fell back over the side of the boat, back into the water. Finn and the others began clearing dolls out of the bottom of the boat. Inside the vast room, the song continued, over and over, over and over. Within a few minutes, the boat was cleared. Dozens of dolls floated, lying still in the water. It's a Small World was going to be closed for restoration for quite some time. The boat passed the giant sun at the end of the Americas scene. Finn studied it carefully. He saw nothing that even remotely resembled a clue. 17. Saturday, mid-morning, found the sky without a cloud. A hot sun burned a yellow hole in the rich blue background, promising thunderstorms by late afternoon. The corner parking lot of Dangerous Dan's used cars was marked by little red and yellow plastic flags on a string that ran from light pole to light pole, giving the school car wash the feel of a circus. A 4-foot-long mock blimp and a big bunch of colorful balloons hovered 50 feet above the asphalt in an effort to draw attention. That was also the job of the girls at the stoplight, who wore jean shorts over their bathing suits and held a sign proclaiming, "Girl Scout Car Wash, $5. Dan's older model Hyundais, Fords, and Buicks had been parked to the side, leaving a large area now covered with hoses, buckets, and lots of white foam as skinny girls struggled to scrub, polish, and shine the cars that lined up for the $5 wash. Most of the time, the process included a water fight, or a bucket brigade, the general chaos kept under control enough to be fun for all, even onlookers like Finn. There was already a rumor going around that It's a Small World had been vandalized the night before and would be closed for months. Police were investigating. Finn stood away from all the water with his friend Dillard, who had taken the occasion to borrow one of his father's Hawaiian shirts. Finn thought he looked pretty cool. Finn spotted Jez as she left the collection table, where she'd been taking in the money. She kicked off her pair of shorts to reveal a dark purple one-piece Speedo and jumped into the middle of a water fight. Suds flew. The girls giggled and screamed. They hosed down a Volvo and sponged it clean. Now wet, with her hair slicked back, Jez looked over at Finn. She'd known he was there all along. Noticing this, Dillard said,
"You think she likes you?"
Finn said,
"She's a girl. No telling what she thinks."
Dillard asked,
"You think girls are smarter than us?"
"In some ways."
"Like what?"
"Like school stuff and friendships and family stuff."
"So we're better at..."
Dillard asked.
"Computer games and farting?" Finn said, cracking up his friend.
"What's so funny?"
said a girl behind them. It was Amanda, wearing a white t-shirt over a swimsuit and a pair of jean shorts. Finn said hi, and she said hi back to both boys. Dillard opened his mouth to say hello, but belched instead. He'd never been much around girls. Both boys laughed hard. Amanda dug into the snug pocket of her jeans and pulled out several bills. She handed Dillard a dollar.
"Hey, Dill," she said, calculatingly coy. "Would you mind getting me an orange soda?"
"Nuh-nuh-nuh,"
he stuttered.
"Happy to."
Dillard asked if Finn wanted anything, and Finn passed him a dollar, asking for a cola and thanking him. Dillard took off. Amanda said,
"The nearest orange soda is at the gas station across the street. It'll take him a while."
"He's not a servant, you know," Finn said.
"I wanted to hear about It's a Small World," she said. "That was you guys, I assume," Finn said.
"You can't say anything to anyone."
"You guys trashed the place?"
She took a step back.
"Why?"
"It wasn't anything like that. It was..."
He felt boxed in.
"Impossible to explain."
"Impossible because you won't, you mean?"
"Impossible because you wouldn't believe it."
"That's not true. Try me."
Finn met eyes with her, considered if this was the right thing to do, and said,
"The dolls came alive and attacked us."
Amanda looked stunned, but she did not make fun of him. Finn returned his attention to the noisy girls in the car wash. He pulled up the leg of his shorts and showed her where he'd been bitten. Amanda gasped.
"Finn!" "I know," he said. "It's getting serious."
"Getting?"
she fired back sarcastically.
"And what's worse, we didn't find any clues to the fable."
"You've got to stop this somehow, Finn. It's too dangerous. It's just stupid to continue,"
Finn said.
"I wish I could, but I don't think I can.
When I do things I shouldn't do, my mother says I need a new pair of glasses, that I should be looking differently at the choices I make."
A silent alarm went off in Finn's head. He tuned out everything around him, everything but Amanda, and focused on her.
"What did you just say?"
"You can't go getting hurt. That's just stupid."
"About the glasses," Finn said.
"Just some dumb thing my mother says."
"Like a different perspective," he said.
"Yeah."
Her concern mounted.
"What if you just stayed up all night and didn't go to sleep? By the time you did go to sleep, the Magic Kingdom would be open. Even if you ended up there, it would be safer."
"And this for the rest of my life, I suppose?"
Finn asked, but his brain was working overtime. A new pair of glasses.
"Hey, isn't that guy a host?"
Amanda asked. Finn spotted Maybeck at about the same moment that Jez did. Maybeck went over to her, said something, and the two started laughing. Jez took Maybeck by the arm and led him over to a lemonade stand. She snatched up two cups and offered him one. Only then, as he peered over the rim of the paper cup, did Maybeck spot Finn and Amanda. His eyes went wide with recognition, and he gave Finn a half wave. Maybeck took two steps toward Finn, but Jez caught him by the arm again, tipped his cup to make him finish his lemonade, and then said something that caused him to crumple up his cup and throw it at her. Jez did the same back at him. Within seconds, it evolved into a water fight, with Maybeck at its center. For some reason, Finn wanted to be at the center of that battle, but his focus shifted past the water fight to the street and a car parked there. Disguising the direction in which he was looking by pretending to scratch his head, Finn said, "Check out that black four-wheel drive that just pulled up to the curb."
"Yeah?"
Amanda said.
"Look closely. Tell me what you see."
Finn turned his back on the car completely now.
"Okay. A woman? A grown-up?"
"Her hands, on the wheel."
"White gloves,"
Amanda supplied.
"That's a little weird."
"A little?"
"Yeah. White gloves are a little weird, even for Florida."
"Like, totally insane?"
Finn observed.
"It's a zillion degrees out."
"You've got to see this,"
Amanda told him. Finn glanced carefully over his shoulder. Goosebumps raced up both arms. The driver rolled the passenger window down. Jez, who'd broken away from the water fight, walked stiffly toward the car and stepped up to the window. The driver leaned over to speak to her, giving Finn a better look. Her face appeared unnaturally pale. She reminded Finn of someone, but he couldn't place her.
"Does she look familiar to you?"
"She looks scared," Amanda said. Finn had been looking at the driver. Only now did he focus on Jez and see her square posture and unexpressive face. The driver had dark hair, pulled back sharply.
"I can think of one reason you might wear gloves and a ton of makeup,"
Finn said dryly. Amanda was off in her own world, still describing Jez.
"She looks so unhappy."
"You think that's her mother?"
"No!"
Amanda snapped sharply.
"It's possible,"
Finn said defensively.
"They don't look too friendly to me," Amanda said. "But you're right about the gloves. What's with that?"
Finn didn't say what he was thinking. You might wear gloves and a lot of makeup if your skin was green. 18. That same Saturday night, the DHIs met at the Indian encampment across from Tom Sawyer Island. At 8 o'clock, the park was still open, so they waited for its closing by hiding invisibly inside the teepee. Finn said,
"We'll make our move during the fireworks finale scheduled for 8:30. All eyes will be aimed at the sky."
"Why not just wait until closing?"
Charlene asked, never one for unnecessary adventure. Philby answered,
"After what happened at It's a Small World, Disney announced that they're increasing security. That means patrols, probably in pairs, maybe in golf carts. We can't afford to get busted. So we crossed the park while there are still guests inside. Seeing a DHI will make sense as long as it isn't past closing."
Finn asked the obvious.
"How did those dolls come to life?"
Philby answered with a question.
"How do we come to life?" "We were designed to cross over, if you believe Wayne. The dolls most definitely were not designed to march around attacking people,"
Maybeck said.
"A certain woman with a green face comes to mind. A spell?"
Finn found it odd but cool to be invisible, to be nothing but a voice. He wondered if Maybeck had gotten as good a look at Jez's mom as he and Amanda had. Philby announced,
"We can talk about this later. For now, we'll travel in groups, never all five of us together, in case we should get caught. And no matter what, we never go it alone. Two groups, Finn and me, the three of you."
No one objected.
"Maybeck," Finn said, "did you get them?"
"Yeah," Maybeck answered. "Hang on, I left them by the door."
Maybeck's arm appeared by the teepee's open door. He produced 5 pairs of plastic glasses.
"I got here a little early," he said.
"What's with that?"
Philby asked. Finn explained.
"Walt's comment to Wayne, and then something a friend of mine said about perspective."
"I don't get it,"
Charlene said.
"As I recall, Walt's exact words to Wayne were, 'I have plans for this place that should put things into perspective.'"
Finn explained.
"In the late 50s and 60s, 3D movies were all the rage. Walt was an illustrator and movie maker. He would have known all about perspective. These days, the 3D movies are some of the coolest things in the parks. I think Walt mentioned it to Wayne for a reason, and Wayne and the others never picked up on it. Perspective. 3D. You have to wear special glasses. That's why Maybeck and the girls are returning to It's a Small World tonight."
"What?"
Charlene said.
"We missed the clue," Finn explained. "We should have found something. Those dolls did not want us in there. Or maybe they wanted our attention on them and not the scenery. What if we weren't looking from the right perspective?"
Philby asked.
"You think the glasses are the answer?" Philby and I are going to take the next clue, clouds, while you guys are at It's a Small World checking out the Mayan sun, this time with glasses.
Isn't going back there a little risky?
Charlene asked nervously.
Maybeck said, It's the last place to look. Lightning doesn't strike twice and all that.
A coil of wind swirled outside of the teepee, tossing up dust. It quieted the group. They waited a minute or more to feel a chill or see Maleficent, but there was nothing.
Charlene asked, What do you suppose happens to us back home in bed if we get busted on this side?
Silence.
I think my parents are suspicious,
Willa announced.
Mine are too, Finn added. They think I'm sneaking out.
My mom's all uptight,
Charlene confessed.
Going to bed at 8 doesn't help things, Maybeck said. My aunt thinks I've totally lost it.
Finn asked Philby and Willa what, if anything, they'd learned about clouds, the next clue in the fable. Philby explained,
There are clouds in so many rides. Pooh, Peter Pan, but the ride with the most clouds and the biggest clouds is Splash Mountain. That's where Finn and I will start.
Start what? Charlene asked.
When we're inside the attractions, Philby announced, we all wear the glasses. We'll gain a better perspective. Let's meet back at the apartment at 10. The button is up there. Use it if you have to. Listen up, Finn said, moving invisibly toward the teepee door and eventually into the area where he could be seen. Majority rules. If you guys need to leave the park, then use the remote.
Maybeck asked,
What if it takes all of us at the same time? What if we're wrong about needing to be close to it?
We'll find out the hard way,
Philby said.
We should get going, Maybeck said anxiously.
What's the matter? Charlene asked Maybeck. You got a hot date?
Maybeck smirked.
Not with you, I don't.
The four others booed him. Maybeck went right on grinning, unperturbed. 19. Finn and Philby climbed into Splash Mountain's waterway carefully. The dark water was cold. Finn didn't like the feeling at all.
Are we sure, he whispered to Philby, that this is worth it? Do we have a choice?
They slogged their way through the first part of the ride, around some turns, and soon encountered a rubber conveyor incline that proved a tough climb. It grew darker the deeper they went into the ride. Aside from his cold, wet legs, Finn felt a different chill all through his body. He considered mentioning it to Philby, but he didn't want to sound afraid like Charlene. They climbed through a second tunnel, much longer and darker than the first. It had stairs on either side for maintenance and emergency evacuation. Only the orange night sky and a slight glow from their holograms offered any light. Once through the second tunnel, they rested briefly before passing a massive tree on their left. In one scene, there was a ladder hanging from a branch, with a laundry line to their right. Here the water current was strong, and the going more treacherous. Philby said softly,
I think we ought to float.
What?
Float,
he repeated. Philby lowered himself fully into the water and leaned back. The water current quickly carried him away from Finn. Reluctantly, Finn did the same, not wanting to be left behind. Both boys maintained their balance and direction by keeping one hand on the steel rail meant to guide the ride's boats.
I've taken this ride a zillion times, Philby said, but this is pretty cool.
Finn didn't love being soaking wet, but he too was enjoying himself. Then they entered a dark scene, a cave-like space filled with auto-animatronic figures. The characters, turned off for the night, all stood frozen in mid-gesture.
Kinda creepy, Finn said.
He'd had enough. The going was perfectly flat here, the current slow. He grabbed the rail and prepared to climb out. Philby dove forward, splashing them both, and grabbed hold of Finn.
You can't do that, Philby warned him. If we climb out, we'll trip the alarm.
What alarm? Finn challenged.
They use infrared sensors to detect anyone who tries to get out of a log car during the ride.
But the ride's shut down.
But is the infrared shut down?
Philby asked.
I doubt it. Besides, there are 36 hidden cameras along the ride. If we climb out, we'll be photographed.
It's pitch black.
But we're not,
he said, indicating his own glow.
We'll be photographed. Trust me. And if we're photographed, we're identified and busted, Philby said.
How do you know any of this stuff?
Can you spell Google? And you waited until now to tell me this?
Finn asked.
I wasn't going to write you a report,
Philby snapped back irritably. Finn's fear grew more intense the deeper they ventured into this cave. They floated faster now as the route twisted and turned. The waist-deep water in the rise chute was getting deeper, and the water was flowing faster.
"If I remember right, we're going into a small drop," Philby announced.
Both boys rushed down the drop. Finn's head went underwater, and he heard something grinding, something mechanical. He bobbed to the surface.
"Did you hear that?" "The rise turned on," Philby declared, his voice unsteady. "That means the log cars are moving."
Finn recalled the marching dolls. He had no desire to try to outrace metal boats shaped to look like logs. Another drop. The water tried to swallow them. Both boys remained on their backs, arms extended to stay afloat. At the bottom, Finn looked ahead to see another tunnel approaching.
"I don't like this," he said.
As they neared the tunnel, they saw lights and heard music playing. Voices sang, "You gotta keep moving along." The robot characters were moving. Giant creatures with long noses and big, bugged-out eyes rocked and danced. One threw a fishing line at the water. Finn said,
"I'm starting to think getting busted wouldn't be too bad."
"Not yet,"
Philby announced. "We've got to hang in there."
The two boys swam and bounced and bumped their way along the water route. They passed fake green hills and low-hanging tree branches, and a 6-foot-tall rabbit holding a paintbrush. These things looked devilish to Finn as he saw them looming above him.
"The ride takes a total of 11 minutes to complete," Philby said. "If we're halfway along, and I bet we are, then the first log cars shouldn't arrive for another 6 minutes. By that time, we'll only have a couple minutes to go." "Why doesn't that sound terribly reassuring?"
Next were mountain backdrops and 12-foot-high bears. Finn looked away, cold and shivering, and anticipated the arrival of a steel log.
"Clouds!"
Philby announced. Finn saw them in the backdrop. They were painted behind a mountain range. He wormed a hand into his pocket and donned the pair of 3D glasses, just as Philby did. Nothing. The clouds looked perfectly normal. Finn squeezed the glasses back into his pocket with difficulty.
"This is crazy," he said. "What are we doing here?" "The more important question," Philby answered, "is who knows we're in here, and why was the ride turned on? If you're trying to cheer me up, you're not doing such a great job."
Finn fired back. A giant rabbit jumped across the scene and called out loudly, which caused Finn to splash in self-defense. "Okay," Finn thought. "Now I'm defending myself against mechanical rabbits. What if these robots come alive the same way the dolls did?"
"Okay," he said. "I would like to get out of here." "More clouds," Philby announced.
Finn fumbled with his glasses again. Wearing them, he took in the clouds and sky. Still nothing. Presently, there were chipmunk voices singing something at such a high pitch and volume that Finn couldn't understand a word. But he could feel the logs approaching. Philby kept glancing over his shoulder. He could feel them, too. A low male voice began narrating the ride. The scene became as dark as inside of a stomach. The boys bounced off the rails and the chute walls. Bruised and cold, Finn grew increasingly desperate.
"Exactly what are we doing here?"
he asked as his head came up from underwater again.
"My bad, Finn," Philby said. "But keep the glasses on, okay? And keep an eye out for more clouds."
A large wolf wearing a cowboy hat and holding a rabbit was saying something that was probably funny, though Finn wasn't listening. His ears were tuned to the steady groan of the system, the approach of the log cars.
"Maybe we risk the cameras," Finn suggested.
Philby said,
"And have our DHIs removed from the park? I don't think so."
Finn knew this was right. He felt his courage gathering and was glad to have it back. They slipped down a dip, traveling ever faster in the dark, churning water. Finn saw light up ahead. He felt a profound sense of gratitude. The end of the ride, in sight at last. But then he remembered where they were in the ride. Next up was a really big drop. The ride's biggest drop of all. Its biggest thrill. Thrill or kill, Finn wondered. He backpaddled, fighting the current.
"That baby's about 4 stories, straight down," Philby said. 45 degrees. 1 million gallons of water driving you like a freight train."
The bodies slapped forward, closer to the edge, despite their vigorous splashing.
"It'll either crush us," Finn said, "or we'll drown."
Philby didn't disagree. Finn said more loudly,
"I said, it'll either crush us or we'll drown."
"Yeah," Philby said, "I think you're right."
He rolled onto his stomach and tried to swim away from the drop, but it was no use. The water was too fast. Finn also rolled over and started swimming. He tried for the edge, happy to climb out. Even with the risk of getting busted, but the strong current prevented him from reaching the side. He panicked. Though the two boys swam frantically, they were actually moving with the current toward the drop. Philby said between strokes,
"If we could get into a log!"
Was that possible? Finn wondered. It did seem the perfect solution. How much longer until a log arrived? Finn wondered. He twisted his watch while flapping his other arm in an awkward crawl. Any moment, he decided. Between gulps of disgusting water, he said,
"Sounds like a plan. Keep swimming!"
They were both still slipping backward despite their efforts. The ride's dramatic plummet drew near. It felt to Finn as if he were being sucked down a giant drain.
"We're not thinking right," he said.
The first log appeared. It looked big and powerful, and it was coming right for them. Still thinking out loud, Finn said,
"We're made of light, Philby. Holograms. We're half-light. We aren't solid. Wayne talked about Einstein, about how we're more space than atoms." He couldn't see Philby through all the splashing.
A voice surfaced.
"I don't think this is the best time to discuss physics," Philby said. "Besides, I probably know more about it than you do."
They heard a loud bump and whack from the dark as the log grew closer.
"If we're mostly light," Finn proposed, "then water current can't affect us. Light moves through water. It doesn't get carried off by it."
Driven by his newfound confidence, Finn rolled onto his back and stroked more gently. Slowly, he pulled away from Philby, and with half the effort. "It's all what I'm thinking," he realized. Philby watched as Finn's glowing body, brighter now, swam past him upstream. In doing so, Philby allowed himself to relax for a moment. A moment too long. Philby was sucked down the throat of the final plummet. Time slowed. Philby tumbled through space and water, holding his breath and then sucking for air. His lungs burned. He couldn't tell what was up or down. Then amid the swirl of black, a hand appeared, a human hand, glowing, as if it had been plugged into the wall. Behind that hand, another shape formed. That shape was an arm, Finn's arm. Finn was inside the log car leaning over. The two boys locked hands, and Finn dragged Philby up and into the log. The log threw out a tremendous splash as it reached the bottom of the chute. By the time Philby had righted himself, now sitting up, the log had snaked through the chute and entered yet another scene. This was the last scene, the most exotic of the attraction. Finn and Philby scrambled for their glasses.
"How did you do that?"
Philby asked.
"I'm not sure, but I think it was all in my head,"
Finn replied. Behind the paddle boat, Finn spotted large pink clouds in a big blue sky. His head swirled with the sounds of voices singing zippity-doo-dah. He slipped on the eyeglasses. There, behind the showboat, he saw a bunch of clouds. In the middle of one of the biggest clouds, he saw several big letters. They appeared to have been spray-painted. F-M-E. When Finn lifted his glasses, the letters disappeared.
"Our first clue,"
Finn whispered, looking for the exit. 20.
"Where's Maybeck?"
Finn asked. The two girls didn't answer right away. They seemed shocked to see him and Philby so wet and so pale.
"We don't know,"
Charlene sounded frightened.
"The sun," Philby said. "Did you try the glasses?"
"Y, I, and R. Three letters. They look painted, added on later,"
Willa replied excitedly.
"Same with us," Philby said. "F, M, and E. We're definitely onto something."
Finn interrupted their glee.
"Where is Maybeck?"
Charlene looked worried.
"We got to the ride, and he said he had something he had to check out. We told him we had to stick together, but he blew us off." "And he hasn't come back,"
Willa said angrily.
"Hasn't come back?"
Philby asked, finally realizing they had a serious problem on their hands.
"And this was like half an hour ago?"
Charlene said.
"He kept checking his watch,"
Willa complained.
"He was nervous about something, like he was eager to get back."
"Oh no,"
Finn heard himself moan.
"The button,"
he and Philby said at once. If Maybeck had taken the button from the apartment with him to the other side, he could leave them all stranded inside the Magic Kingdom until he returned. No one knew if the button would cross over or stay behind, but they didn't want to wait to find out. The four took off at a run. They approached the castle with caution. It seemed a likely location for security guards. At night, light streamed up onto its stone exterior, the towering spires pointing like fingers into the dark sky.
Crouched behind some thick bushes, just off the ramp that led up to the castle, the kids waited, listening intently and looking in all directions. Charlene nudged Philby, who nudged Finn. A pair of pirates, figures from Pirates of the Caribbean, not humans, lurked in shadow just inside the castle's first arch, waiting. Their mechanical eyes never blinked. Finn whispered,
"I know those two. They were part of the group that attacked me."
"You're right," said Philby. "I was there too, remember?"
"You think they're waiting for us?" Charlene asked.
"No. How could they possibly know?"
Finn cut himself off.
"Maybeck," Willis said. "You don't think..."
"Maybeck is not an overtaker," Philby declared.
"He could be a spy," Charlene proposed.
"No way,"
Finn said sharply.
"If they're waiting for us, it means Maybeck's in trouble."
"He's been caught,"
Willis said. A chill passed through Finn. He waited a moment to see if it lingered, in case it meant that the witch was nearby. The feeling passed. Philby said,
"Didn't Wine say something about secret ways into the castle?"
Finn finished for him.
"Yes, he did. And he also said if you took a wrong step in Escher's keep, you'd ended up in the moat, but he never showed us any secret doors."
"I know where one is," Philby announced.
"What?"
Finn said, astonished.
"The MK," Philby explained. "I was in this room, and I heard these two guys talking about counting stones, castle stones. I'm positive that was it. I had no idea what they meant, but it could be a secret door, a way inside."
"How many stones and from where?" Willa asked. "We've got to hurry. Maybeck may need us."
"I don't remember, but the point is, there must be a stone you push to get inside."
"But that's in a computer game?"
Charlene protested, sweeping one arm across the scene.
"This is real life?"
They all looked at her glowing, transparent arm.
"Or sort of,"
she added.
"The game is part of real life,"
Philby said.
"Follow me,"
Finn said. Together, the four DHIs crept on their stomachs up to the wall of the castle, where they were now out of sight from the waiting pirates.
"Spread out," Finn said. "Push every stone you can reach."
They formed a long line, wrapping around the side of the castle, their backs to Tomorrowland, where the manicured lawn spilled down toward the moat. Finn pushed against the cool stone blocks. He started at knee height and pushed against every stone he could. Then he moved an arm's length toward Charlene, immediately to his right, and started again. A few minutes into this process, Willa called out,
"Got it!"
Finn and the others hurried over. A door had opened in the wall of the castle. It was pitch black inside. Philby said,
"Always trust computer games."
With no one stepping up, Finn took the lead. The chilly corridor smelled damp and old. Philby entered last. He said,
"Wait up! We gotta shut this thing!"
Willa turned to help him. She found an iron handle sticking out of the wall. She pushed and couldn't move it, then leaned her weight onto it, and it rotated toward the floor. The stone door made a sound like fingernails on a blackboard as it closed. Finn was still very wet from his ordeal at Splash Mountain. His soaked clothes made him very cold now. He felt his way along the cool rock, tripped when he reached some stairs, and warned the others in a dry whisper to look out. Together they climbed the stairs, at the top of which Finn encountered a dead end. It was a stone wall that didn't budge when he leaned against it. Charlene found an iron handle, just like the one Willa had found at the other end. The two girls leaned against it, and the wall in front of Finn moved open a crack. He and Philby pushed it farther open.
"The throne,"
Finn said, recognizing where this door led. They stepped into the throne room in the waiting area for Cinderella's royal table. There were tapestries and flags on the walls. The throne was attached to the hidden door, so that when the door had opened, the throne had moved with it. As a team, they pushed the door back, but not before Philby had taken a moment to find the hidden switch, a wooden knob tucked away on the back of the throne itself. When this knob was moved, the door tripped open. They tried it once the door was back in place, and sure enough, it came open for them, offering them a way out, if needed. Minutes later, the three others followed Finn up Escher's keep. He had carefully memorized the way, but took his time, knowing one false step could...
"Thar they be!"
came a gruff voice from behind and down below. Finn and the others turned to see the same two audio-animatronic pirates standing at the base of Escher's keep. They appeared to be overwhelmed by the complications of the stairways, ladders, and platforms, all of which were interconnected in improbable ways. One pirate was dressed in a blue coat, the other red. The one in red pulled out his knife and pointed up the stairs.
"Hurry!"
Charlene cried out. The sound of clunky mechanical legs echoed up the first stairway.
"We can't hurry," Finn replied. "We make a mistake, and we end up in the moat, and that would mean security guards."
The pirates continued to climb. Philby said,
"Besides, they won't figure it out."
But to his amazement, the two pirates made a lucky guess at the first platform and found the correct stairway. At the top, the red pirate turned left, but the blue one grabbed him by the shoulder and stopped him. They were frighteningly close to the kids now, only one stairway behind. Finn remembered how to get onto the upside-down mirror stairs. He stepped on the correct tiles and then tested the stairway with his right foot. It was solid. He climbed, and the others followed. As they came out the end of a short tunnel, their images appeared upside down to the pirates below.
"Avast!"
the red pirate called out sharply. He and the blue pirate hurried up the set of stairs in front of them. Charlene charged past Finn, clearly afraid. But Philby, Willa, and Finn watched from their inverted positions as the two pirates reached the next landing and tried to decide on a course. They argued between themselves.
"You wouldn't know east if the sun was rising. Nah, when was the last time you knew fore from aft?"
They stepped up onto a set of stairs, seemingly proud of their choice, and promptly vanished from sight amid a roar of rough-sounding words. A moment later, two splashes. Finn said,
"And that would be the moat."
A few minutes later, the four kids rode the night sky elevator to the apartment together. To their confusion, they found the remote button on the coffee table, exactly where Finn had left it.
"Either he came here and sent himself back," Philby said, "leaving us the remote, or he never left here in the first place," Finn completed.
"That might explain the pirates," Willa said, still wondering if Maybeck was somehow a spy.
"Or it might tell us he's been caught," Philby suggested.
"What about the teepee?" Charlene asked. "Didn't we say if we didn't meet here, we'd meet there?"
"Yes, we did. You're right," Finn said. "I don't love the idea of going back the way we came," Philby said. "Those clowns could return."
Finn moved over to the silvery Mickey plate on the wall by the window.
"Wayne used the express lane," he reminded.
"I'm not going first on that thing," Charlene declared.
Finn said,
"Then I will."
He hit the plate. The floor fell out from under him, and he slid in his damp clothes down a twisting, steep exit tube. It was the best tube he'd ever ridden, including every water park he'd ever been to. It leveled off near the bottom, slowing him down, and he popped through a pair of doors and landed on a patch of grass in a shadowy nook outside the castle walls. He rolled out of the way and waited. A moment later, Willa came through, then Charlene, and finally Philby. Together they made their way toward Frontierland and the teepee, staying in shadow and hiding often. They called for Maybeck inside the teepee. No answer. Then, at Philby's urging, they climbed inside to get out of sight. Finn said,
"We have to find him before we go back."
"But it's late," Charlene protested. "We have to get back. Listen, he's the one who took off. He broke the rules. Why should we be the ones punished?"
Finn asked,
"And if it was you left behind?"
"Shh,"
Philby said. The park suddenly seemed unusually quiet. It felt to Finn as if there were 1,000 ears trained in their direction. A rustle came from the bushes just on the other side of the teepee wall. They heard footsteps, someone circling the teepee.
"I know you're in there,"
said Maleficent in her dry, raspy voice, but Finn heard her in his head, not through his ears.
"Missing something, are we?"
She clucked her tongue.
"What a shame you didn't listen and obey. I told you to stay away from here. Nasty children. Nasty little children."
The footfalls continued around the teepee and reached the front door. The teepee's interior grew steadily colder until the kids could see four plumes of their fogged breath emerging clearly from their invisible bodies. Across from him, Finn heard a brief but sharp clatter of teeth. Charlene's, no doubt. The four plumes of fog stopped as all four held their breath. A gangly shadow stretched across the open doorway. Maleficent's voice sounded like slowly cracking glass.
"You should have stayed away while you had the chance."